Greetings, listeners. This is VK3OTN, the official station of the Radio Amateurs Old-Timers Club of Australia, with this month's news and information bulletin for members and friends of the club for December 2024. I am Andrew, a VK3 Charlie Alpha Hotel. Details on when to hear the news and information bulletins are available at the club's website, www.raotc.org.au. VK3OTN is available on a wide range of radio platforms, HF, VHF and UHF, along with 2-meter repeaters, amateur television, DMR, that is digital mobile radio, and D-Star. These news broadcasts are available for download for up to 6 months, just in case you missed the original news broadcast from the RAOTC website. Just put RAOTC into your favourite search engine. If you'd like to contact the club, then why not send us an email? Our address is raotc@raotc.org.au. I hope you enjoy this month's news broadcast. Welcome to the December 2024 edition of RAOTC Club News. Have you tried the OTN download yet? Your download password was printed on your September OTN address sheet. If you no longer have it, send an email to raotc@raotc.org.au and we'll email it to you. We have the last 4 OTNs available for download. The most recent 3 issues are in colour. The OTN editors are working on the March 2025 issue. They are always looking for articles. Please write something for us to publish. OTN is a vehicle for members to tell their stories. We also value letters to the editor and your opinions. Many of the regular contributors had to retire because they are having health problems, and sadly, we have lost some of them because they are no longer with us and have become silent keys. The 2025 Melbourne Luncheon will be held on the 27th of March. We are finalising a speaker and topic. We will have more information in the February broadcast. Our Administrative Officer Jim, VK3ZKK, and his wife Judy, VK3FJAG, kindly manned a table at the recent Spark Radio Fest at Rosebud on the Mornington Peninsula, south of Melbourne, on the 17th of November, and we showcased the RAOTC to many amateurs attending and gave away some copies of surplus OTNs. Hopefully this will have helped promote the club to the wider amateur community, enticing others to join. For those that aren't aware, the very modest membership fees cover primarily the cost of printing and the club's journal, OTN, and the mailing cost by Australia Post. Christmas Day 2024 will be the 50th anniversary of Cyclone Tracy. The March OTN will have 2 articles about the cyclone from 2 of our members. One is by Bruce Baffles, VK3UV. Unfortunately, due to other pressures, the membership renewal reminders were not included in the March 2024 OTN. However, they have been sent in the September OTN. As a result, we have 55 members who have not renewed their membership. If you think you may be unfinancial, please send us an email to raotc@raotc.org.au and we'll take steps to sort the oversight out. We need your support. Please rejoin. At present, there seems to be a very small number of members on committee doing all the heavy lifting. What do you think you might be able to do to help out? It's been a challenging year for all of us, with Bill Raper, VK3BR, and other long-time committee members no longer able to help out due to age and other health issues. It's time for others to roll up their sleeves and fill the void. New members. Today I am pleased to welcome the following new members to the RAOTC. Jim Jones, VK5 Juliet Foxtrot, became full member number 1883 on the 5th of November 2024. Silent Keys. Now, for those that may have missed the WA National News on November 17, let's pass the microphone over to our fellow RAOTC member, Lee, VK3GK.
This is WIA Director Lee Moyle, VK3GK. The WIA has received some very sad news that Bruce Bathall's VK3UV passed away peacefully last Sunday. He will be sadly missed. Bruce was an honorary life member of the WIA, an honour that was well earned by Bruce. He had a time as a member of the WIA Board of Management, including as President, Vice President, and at one stage even the Treasurer. He was even the editor of AR Magazine for many years. Bruce also contributed to the Institute in so many ways. He was very involved in WISN and the RAOTC as well. Bruce was also a married celebrant. Bruce was an active member of FAMPARC and previously a member of MDRC. He was always up for a chat, and I personally had known him since the early 1980s when I was first licensed, and both members of MDRC in Moorabbin. He always enjoyed catching up with other hams. I was aware of his health had been deteriorating in recent times. Our sincere condolences to his family and friends. Vale Bruce Bathall's VK3UV, Silent Key.
It is with regret I report only one Silent Key this month. Bruce Bathall's VK3UV, who passed away peacefully on November 10, 2024. Bruce's shoes will be very hard to fill. Many members will recall the compiled the broadcast along with Ian, VK3JS, prior to health issues getting on top of him, at which time I took the broadcast on. I'm sure there will be more comprehensive tributes in both Amateur Radio Magazine as well as OTN in upcoming issues. Let us pause a moment in memory of our departed colleagues. Members are reminded that the very latest club news is available via the ROTC website. Put ROTC into your favourite search engine to find it.
You are listening to VK3OTN and associated relay stations. VK3OTN is the official station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club Australia Incorporated, with the monthly news and information bulletin for members and friends of the club.
This month, once again, we have a couple of interesting technical articles for you. First put to air in August 2013. First up is Clive, VK6CSW, who tells us about naval air wireless telegraphy at the start of World War II. This will be followed by Ron, VK3AFW, and a discussion on power-saving devices and other techniques that cold callers will use in order to scam you. I trust you'll enjoy these articles this month.
And now, over to Clive VK6CSW with another of his very interesting articles.
Naval Air Wireless Telegraphy at the Start of World War II. In 1964, I was a qualified flying instructor stationed at No. 1 Flying Training School, RAF Linton-on-Ouse, a few miles northwest of the ancient city of York, teaching Royal Navy recruits the gentle art of military jet flying, as well as trying to instill in them something of the aerodynamics of mechanical flight. The chief ground school instructor was a naval lieutenant commander, whose name unfortunately I've forgotten after all these years, but let's call him Lieutenant Commander X, whose survival in the early years of World War II was remarkable. I was reminded of his story when I chanced across an item of Royal Naval Aviation radio communications of that era, which I'll detail later. During World War II, Lieutenant Commander X was piloting single-engine Fairey Swordfish torpedo-carrying biplanes from a carrier forming part of a supply convoy destined for the Russian port of Murmansk. They were sailing in the North Sea, somewhere between Norway and Iceland, when, on this fateful day, his was one of three aircraft detailed to conduct searches for enemy shipping, particularly U-boats, which might attack the convoy. The weather was poor with low cloud and restricted visibility, but the Swordfish was a very slow old bird and would have coped all right with these conditions. HF radio silence would only be broken if enemy shipping were sighted. While the aircraft were searching their designated areas, the convoy received a top priority signal to change course due to intercepted enemy communications indicating an impending U-boat pack attack. Incidentally, the intercept was probably decoded by Bletchley Park. To avoid giving away the convoy's present position, the patrolling Swordfish were not informed of the convoy's new route. On completion of their 3.5-hour patrols, the Swordfish were to rendezvous with the supposed position of the carrier, based on the assumption that the convoy would have proceeded as originally planned. The normal rendezvous technique was to carry out a square search in the carrier's estimated position and then complete the interception either visually or with the assistance of a short-range VHF rotating homing beacon on the carrier. Under no circumstances would the HF radio be used. Failing to find the carrier was inevitable. The decision to abandon the aircraft had to be made in the interest of saving the convoy. The three Swordfish and their crews were simply left to their fate. After a fruitless search for the carrier, Lieutenant Commander X twigged that something had gone very wrong and decided that he would use his remaining fuel to try to reach the Norwegian coast. The engine died just short of land, and they ditched about 200 yards offshore, but were able to swim to safety. Norwegian resistance fighters found them and, as with many other Allied airmen, were able to smuggle them back across the North Sea to England a few days later. Nothing was ever heard again of the other two crews. Here, then, is a background story of how these remarkable old aircraft were operated and gives a clue as to what it must have been like to operate a single-engined, open-cockpit biplane in freezing conditions over an unforgiving sea while compelled to observe radio silence. The large 45-foot, 6-inch or 13.9-metre wingspan Swordfish, affectionately known to its crews as the String Bag, was the only biplane to remain in frontline operational service throughout the war. Its incredibly low stalling speed of less than 30 knots enabled it to take off and land at little more than walking speed when the carrier was steaming into wind. Many were operated from merchant aircraft carriers, known as MACs, modified merchant ships which had flight decks barely 300 feet long. It is with this background that the following story, taken from Naval Air News, is presented. And I quote, "Operating a radio in naval aircraft at the beginning of the Second World War was no easy matter. Radio telephony, RT, was a distant dream for naval aviators in 1939. There was no tally-ho, bandits at 9 o'clock high for the fleet air arm. RT equipment was in short supply, and in any case the contemporary sets were of too limited a range to be of any use to naval aviators. Communication from ship or shore to aircraft was a matter of Morse code, while communication between aircraft was done by Aldis lamp or hand signals. While pilots flew and observers navigated, radio equipment was largely the domain of the TAG, or telegraphist air gunner. At the beginning of the war, these were enlisted men who had undertaken a course in telegraphy and another course in gunnery. Later on, when radio equipment became simpler to use, any naval air gunner was entitled to the TAG label. At this point, though, TAGs were highly trained in the radio apparatus of the day. There were no radio mechanics at that time, and each TAG was responsible for maintaining his own set, something they took great pride in. The radio equipment carried by naval aircraft at the beginning of the war was at once basic and highly complicated. Basic technically, but complicated to operate. Until the Blackburn Skua arrived, fleet air arm aircraft didn't even have an intercom, and communications between pilot and crew had to be conducted through a Gosport tube, which was a rubber voice tube used by flight instructors in the early days of military aviation to give instructions and directions to their students. Otherwise, these instructions and directions were given by means of a complex array of hand signals. The standard radio fit in fleet air arm aircraft consisted of a general purpose or Jeep wireless telegraphy set, which was made up of a 1082 receiver, a 1083 transmitter, and an R1110 beacon receiver for detecting an aircraft carrier's revolving beacon. Accumulators for the sets generally had to be charged overnight and lugged by hand to the aircraft. The WT used an overhead aerial, but to make best use of the HF equipment, a trailing aerial could be wound out laboriously and at great risk to equipment and career. Former TAG Ken Sims described the problems surrounding these devices experienced during a training flight in a Blackburn Shark, which was a large torpedo-carrying biplane built in 1933 and subsequently superseded by the Fairey Swordfish. Ken says, "On my first WT exercise, I lost a trailing aerial, a heinous offence, because of the hand signals. No one had explained to me exactly what they were, and I was simply asked if I knew the thumbs up. Well, of course I did. Everyone knows that. So off we went. In the air, I touched the pilot on the shoulder and circled my hand and finger. I'd heard from other pilots that this meant, can I reel out? Down went his thumb, and I sat there glumly wondering why he'd refused the request. After much waiting, he rocked his wings and put his thumb up. Gleefully, I reeled out. To my horror, as I rose up in the cockpit, we came in and landed. Luckily, I recovered the all-important weights from out on the airfield, for the loss of which one paid dearly. I didn't need telling then that thumbs down meant reel out, and thumbs up meant reel in. During operations, it was this equipment that allowed the aircraft to find their way back to the aircraft carrier. Radio silence could not be broken, so aircraft could not radio in for a fix. Even if they did, the carrier would not have responded. Instead, they had to follow a tricky dance, navigating around the carrier's VHF beacon. Lloyd Richards, a TAG with 803 Squadron, described to me how beacon navigation worked. The beacon made one revolution per minute. Initially, we were issued with chronometers to time the signal, but they ran out with aircraft getting shot down, and they were very expensive, he explained. We subsequently used wristwatches. You would receive your bearing onto the ship, say 90 degrees, but we would receive and steer the reciprocal of that, 180 degrees of that bearing, and we would use that as a bearing. It would be all right if the ship was stationary, but of course it was moving. You would always approach from the stern. Without a chronometer to time it precisely, if the signal came out earlier, for example 10 seconds less than a minute, and the next came up at 9 or 12, you would turn to the right or left, depending on where you were in relation to the ship. With a chronometer, the time difference could be worked out precisely and equated to a course, but with a wristwatch, it was a case of less than a minute, steer one way, more than a minute, steer the other way. Eventually, the beeps would be at precise one-minute intervals, and this meant that you were heading straight for the carrier. Lloyd continues, "The WT equipment was technically straightforward, but far from simple to use. The set was tuned painstakingly by fitting pairs of plugs, there were 20 pairs, one red plug and one green, into sockets, more or less by trial and error, until the correct coil for a particular frequency was reached." Richards explained, "You would get on your receiving frequency, then back-tune the transmitter until you picked up your own signal. It was all done by hand, eye, and making notes. When I was a boy, 13 years old, I built a radio which was more advanced than that unit." And there we conclude the extract from Naval Air News. Just a couple of points worth mentioning, perhaps. The 1082 receiver and the 1083 transmitter, which formed the wireless set in the Swordfish, used ordinary 2-volt filament battery valves requiring accumulators to be carried to power the filaments, and high tension batteries for the HT supply, as well as another battery for the grid bias. Well, one can only say that, thank goodness, things have moved on a bit since those days.
Thank you, Clive.
You are listening to VK3OTN. VK3OTN is the official station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club, Australia, Incorporated, with the monthly news and information bulletin for members and friends of the club.
OTN on disc. Are you aware that the entire collection of OTN is available on disc, delivered right to your door for the minimal cost of $25? The files are all in a portable document format or PDF and can be viewed on any tablet or desktop PC. As time moves on, you've probably noticed that over the years you tend to hoard a few things. When something new arrives home, you have to find room to keep it. Well, why not consider adding the entire collection of OTN? The really good news is, it won't take up any space at all, and it won't provide any food for the silverfish, if you're plagued by them. There is another advantage that might not be quite so evident. The files are pretty much the same as what goes off to the printer twice a year. As time moves on, many readers realise their eyes aren't as young as they used to be. Viewing articles on a 22-inch screen is a whole lot easier. You can zoom right in and have one whole column on the screen at a time. Like online newspapers, it's not quite the same as a printed copy. But the advantage is you don't have to worry about where you're going to keep the things. Further details of how to order OTN on disc is available from the RAOTC website, www.raotc.org.au. This is Andrew, VK3CAH.
And now, over to Ron, VK3AFW.
Hello. I'm sure most of you have had an earnest young person knocking at your door, offering you a free power control switch to turn off all your electrical appliances. On principle, I don't buy or accept anything offered to me by a door knocker or someone calling on the phone. I'm aware that any stranger, even one with an ID, could have intent to gather the information you would rather not have broadcast. It might be the details of your stereo, your TV, maybe a painting or two, a vase on the mantelpiece, things that are portable and could bring a few dollars at the local cash converter. Then again, the information on your personal details could be bundled and sold to companies looking to target certain profiles of potential buyers. I already have more than enough emails and phone calls from overexcited sales reps, and I don't need any more. Also, I feel insulted by the premise that this unqualified person must come inside to fit the control, as I obviously would be unable to do this task of plugging something into the PowerPoint. Then again, I don't think I need this device. I already have a power-saving routine in place. When I retire for the night, I switch off all of the electronic equipment. Well, almost. I have an internet modem and a fax machine that are on 24/7, and the fridge and the bedroom alarm clock and the clock in the oven are all left on. All that said, there is an issue with power consumption that we, as electrically educated persons, can understand and maybe explain to others. Building more power generating capacity is becoming less likely than it was a decade ago. Local residents and pressure groups complain effectively to the local MP against proposals for new wind generators, new transmission lines, or new conventional power stations. Proposals for building infrastructure brings howls of protest. Keeping old technology limping along is the current modus operandi. We therefore need to reduce our power consumption to avoid brownouts. The increase in standby power in our homes is insidious. If you have a door opening system It probably has a linear power supply, which is using several watts 24 hours, 7 days a week. Most stereos have linear power supplies with a 10 or 20 watt standby consumption as a normal thing. The problem is with the transformer. Iron losses depend on the applied voltage, and if the full voltage is applied, as happens in standby mode, then the iron losses are the same as if the system were on full load. The standby power can be 25% to over 50% of normal power consumption. Switch mode power supplies are better, but the older ones still consume 1 to 5 watts on standby. And there is the issue of radiated conductor interference to our own reception. 1 watt or less has been considered an appropriate standby power level by so-called green organisations. But if you have a TV, a stereo, a DVD player, an electric start heater, an air conditioner, a microwave oven, a programmable dishwasher, programmable clothes washer, a garage opener, a computer, a printer, a scanner, a fax, a cordless telephone, and a gadget charger, all on standby, then at only 1 watt each, there is at least 15 watts going 24 hours, 7 days a week. If it consumes 2 watts, then that's maybe 263 kilowatt hours per year. Not all of these devices are so frugal. Some estimates of domestic standby power suggest consumers are paying over $500 per year for the privilege of turning stuff on and off with a remote control. At least one manufacturer has now produced power supplies that have a 30 milliwatt standby consumption. But it will be decades before the old gear is no longer in service and such frugal devices are fitted. In the meantime, I suggest you segregate stuff that must stay on from stuff that doesn't need to be on all the time. Use a power board with one or two switches and flip the switch when you are finished with them. So until next month, be frugal and stay well. 73.
Thank you, Ron.
Perf Luncheons. The popular and well-attended monthly luncheons for ROTC members and friends in and around the Perf area are held on the second Tuesday of each month. The VK6 ROTC group have a new venue, the Woodbridge Hotel, east of Guildford. Reports indicate the hospitality to be excellent. The Perf group meet at 11:30 a.m. for lunch at 12 midday. This is not a buffet meal, but excellent food in both pensioner and standard portions are available. We would like to place orders at 12 midday, so please don't be late. This information is courtesy of Phil, VK6ZKO, whose contact details can be found on the club's website.
You are listening to VK3OTN and associated relay stations. VK3OTN is the official station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club, Australia, Incorporated, with the monthly news and information bulletin for members and friends of the club.
In keeping with tradition, we'll finish the broadcast off with a short, humorous story, so here's this month's offering. A chicken walks into a library, selects a book, and walks up to the counter and tells the librarian, "Book, book, book, book." The librarian is rather surprised, however, being a public library, records the loan of the book to the chicken. The next day, the same chicken walks into the library, selects another book, and you guessed it, walks up to the counter and announces, "Book, book, book, book." Once again, the librarian records the loan of the book to the chicken. This goes on for several days, and eventually the curiosity of the librarian gets the better of her. And after all, everyone knows that chickens can't read, and so follows the chicken out of the library. The chicken goes around to an adjacent garden that has a large ornamental pond. In the middle of the pond are some water lilies, and there sits a large green frog. The chicken tells the frog, "Book, book, book, book," and then throws the book into the middle of the pond near the frog. The frog replies, "Read it, read it, read it." At least those of you who have grandkids now have a story for them.
That's all we have for you this month, and we hope you found something of interest. Thanks for being with us, and we hope you will join in the callbacks, where callbacks are taken. The next IOTC news and information broadcast will take place on the first Monday of February next year, on the same frequencies, and at the same times as today, and I hope you've enjoyed our broadcasts throughout the year. If you have missed all or part of this broadcast, or you just want to listen to it again, it is available for download from the RAOTC website. Simply go to www.raotc.org.au. Again, the website URL is www.raotc.org.au. On the right-hand side is the main menu. Click on VK3OTN Broadcasts, and you will be able to see the various times and frequencies of the VK3OTN transmissions by all of our volunteers, provided of course a volunteer is available. Down towards the bottom of the page is the current and previous 5 broadcasts for you to listen to. Sometimes the relay station is an automated broadcast, for example, a repeater, where no operator is available to take callbacks. Other times the volunteer operator suffers from very heavy local QIM, and callbacks are not always possible. Many operators need a small amount of time to switch from playing a recorded file to using a microphone. Please be mindful of this. This is VK3OTN signing clear from today's news and information session. 73 and a Happy New Year from the RAOTC broadcast team.